Yeah, my feeling is it would be great if we could actually have more of a conversation. But I'm going to take the first 5 minutes, if I can do it that quickly, to explain to you what fusion voting is and what the Working Families Party is and why I'm here. In some ways, I should this discussion should happen in conjunction with a discussion about instant runoff voting and proportional representation, because what it is a discussion about an electoral reform that would make a third party more viable in this country and that would start to break the monopoly on power that the two major parties have, or the two branches of the one major party, as some people say. I will start with fusion voting and just explain it really quickly, because a lot of people don't have any idea what it is. And there is a flyer upstairs at the Alliance for Democracy table. It's bright orange, so you can recognize it, that explains all of this. So I could give you guys these, and I only have two with me, but for more detail and also for a contact. Yes? Into the mic. Okay. I will start right now. I had actually begun, but I'll begin another beginning. Okay, fusion voting. Let me go there first, because it's an essential piece of the puzzle. Fusion voting is a form of voting that used to be legal all over the United States up until the 1900s, the early 1900s. It was a form of voting that allowed a party to nominate whoever they wanted. And what that meant was two parties might fuse and nominate the same candidate, but you could vote for that candidate on your party line. You didn't have to go vote on another party line. There was a lot of fusing between the Democrats and the Populists. The Populist Party, as most people know, was a real party in the second half of the 19th century in this country. And part of the reason it was a real party was because fusion voting was legal. Populists were people who had an economic agenda. They would sometimes vote for the Democratic Party candidate, but they would be damned if they were going to vote as a Democrat. They were not going to be part of the Democratic Party, for much the same reasons that working class people today are leaving the Democratic Party in droves, because the Democratic Party speaks more now to cultural issues, so-called, to liberal elite issues. I don't know how many of you read the What's the Matter with Kansas, but it outlines it clearly. And the Republicans have managed somehow to turn that populist anger into an anger against a liberal elite as opposed to an economic elite. What we want to do is to bring fusion voting back into the equation. When fusion voting was legal in Oregon, we actually elected a populist governor, Governor Penoyer, who some of you may have heard of, or at least you've seen the streets named after, and that's who he is. He was a populist. He represented the Populist Party, and he was in power because of fusion voting. In 1896, the Republicans made a move in most states in the country to make fusion voting illegal, because they saw that the populists and the Democrats were fusing and were therefore putting in place a farm labor alliance with a populist economic agenda. There are some states where fusion is still legal and has been all along, where the Democrats were powerful enough that they were able to hold on to fusion voting. New York State is the prime example that people use. New York State has had fusion voting, and the examples that most of us know, if you've ever lived on the East Coast, are the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party, which play a role, a very prominent role, in New York State politics. About 5 years ago, a group of labor unions and community organizations formed something called the Working Families Party in New York State. The Working Families Party was designed to speak to populist economic issues, to design an economic platform that could appeal to those people who we finally started to call Reagan Democrats, the people that the Republican Party started to attract in 1980 and have only gained more and more and more of since then. 40% of the union members, 40% of the union members in the state of Oregon vote Republican. Why? Because the Democrats are not putting forward an economic platform. They are only talking about the so-called cultural issues. And for the most part, blue-collar, working-class people are conservative on cultural issues. So they are voting against their own economic self-interest in order to have some sense of reflecting what it is they stand for. What we want to do is to get fusion voting legalized again in Oregon and to start a Working Families Party here in Oregon so that we can pull back that 40% and all those non-union working families in this state who tend to vote Republican because they're voting on cultural issues. We want to either run our own candidates or fuse with either a Democratic or a Republican candidate, but as a party to put forward a platform and say, we will nominate you only if you stand for these issues. And these issues are economic issues. They are issues of health care coverage. They are issues of minimum wage. They are issues of education. When you poll working people in this state, those are the issues they put at the top of their list. It's not gun control and gay marriage that they put at the top of their list. But if those other issues aren't part of anybody's agenda, they're going to vote on gay marriage and gun control. So you need to somehow force those issues back onto the agenda if you're ever going to have a progressive economic discussion in this country. So that is what this is all about. And we have been talking for 2 years. It's important that we get labor support for this. We don't want it to be a Portland-based effort. We want it to be a broad-based effort. Finally, because, as some of you know, the AFL-CIO split rather dramatically about a month ago, all of a sudden the folks in the labor movement and outside of the labor movement understand that there is no longer a critical mass within the State Federation of Labor to do political work, because it's basically split in half. They've lost at least 40%, possibly 50% of their members and their financial support. So we need a new home for political work to be done that would reflect issues relevant to working people. So all of a sudden, the Working Families Party idea has gained a lot of purchase in this state. There is going to be a resolution before the State Federation of Labor has their convention in 2 weeks. There's going to be a resolution calling for the formation of a Working Families Party. We're going to form a Working Families Party. We are then going to go forward and try to get the legislature to pass a fusion bill in 2007 when they reconvene. If they won't do it, we'll go to a ballot initiative to get fusion legalized. I personally think we can actually get the legislature to legalize fusion because last year the Libertarians put in a fusion bill into the legislature because they see the value of it too. And then the question is going to be, who can out-organize whom? Is the libertarian agenda the one that's going to appeal to working people in this state, or is the working families agenda going to appeal? And it's going to be a real contest. But as I answer the people who are afraid of the libertarian opposition, if we think we can't organize them, what are we doing in this business? If we don't believe in our issues enough and think that they have a broad enough appeal, we should go home and tend our gardens instead. So to me, it's a fight I'd like to fight. And I'm convinced also that it has to be done hand in hand with all the other kinds of electoral reforms that are being discussed at this conference over the weekend. Because it does nobody any good to have viable third parties if money still plays the role it does in politics. Because there's no way you can compete financially. So you have to get money out of politics. You have to guard the integrity of the ballot box, and you have to build another voting structure that takes away this tyranny of the two-party system. So that's all I want to say, and I'd really, if anyone has questions, I know it's sort of a new concept for a lot of people, so if you have questions, please. Yeah?
I'm from New York. Fusion is still legal
there. Absolutely.
And I have a friend who works for the Working Families Party in New York.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Is that party becoming national if it gets established in the state?
Yes. I mean, would they? Yes and no. I mean, because each party is a state creature, not a national creature. It's actually a county creature in some ways too, or a precinct. And so they are encouraging the proliferation of working families parties, but they don't actually have to do too much encouraging because their own record is speaking for itself. If you want to find out more about the things that they've accomplished lately, it's their website is fabulous. It's Working Parties Fam. WorkingFamiliesParty.org. And when you go to their website, you can click on Working Families Party and get all the history of the New York Party, or click on Fusion and learn all about Fusion and the laws in various states and so on, including Oregon.
What other states
have you? Well, there are other states where Fusion is still legal. Oh, okay, excuse me. What other states have a Working Families Party? And how I was going to answer that was, there are other states where fusion also continues to be legal. Massachusetts, sort of. Connecticut, yes. Mississippi, go figure. I don't know. Delaware. I mean, it was sort of arbitrary what happened back in 1896, right? So there were about six or seven states that remained with a fusion voting system. Of those states, Connecticut has actually moved forward fairly quickly with the Working Families Party. Massachusetts is moving forward, Ohio, Missouri, Washington State. There's one other I'm forgetting, and Oregon. Excuse me. So there is ferment. Yeah. Yes?
During this seminar, will there be a strategy discussed on how, because the power structure seems to hold all the cards,
Yes, they do.
How do we organize the people sufficiently to represent a bloc that we actually have any power at all? Because we must have a pretty important strategy that we're going to have to identify with so that we can help together the bloc.
The question, to repeat, was, will there be strategy sessions at this conference to talk about how, in fact, we're going to build a majority? And there will be, as I understand it, many strategy sessions and many workshops. And I want to stress the word work, because I think that's what makes them into strategy sessions, if they're not just passive listening kind of sessions, but true strategy sessions. And part of why I'm excited about this Working Families Party idea is because I think it does start to break the logjam in terms of the way the country has been divided since 1980. I think 1964 was a turning point, then 1980 was a turning point, and I'm hoping 2006 or 2008 is going to be a turning point where something's going to start to change, and somehow we are going to start to build a serious populist alliance that would look very much like, frankly, what the populist alliance looked like 100 years ago. And part of that is, I think we need to put forward economic issues. And we have watched the Democratic Party being taken over by the body snatchers, who have essentially taken the economic issues out of the agenda. If you watch the John Roberts hearing, it was a perfect example. What did we talk about the whole time? Abortion. Who set that agenda? Nobody talked about labor law. Nobody talked about health care. Nobody had talked about a single economic issue. If you listen to the debates, the Democratic candidates in all the debates, actually, in the 2004 elections, rarely did you hear an economic platform being put forward. And I think part of what happened was, I watched this actually, I was in Washington, D.C. when NAFTA was passed. And I watched that vote with a great deal of interest, because what I saw was, on both sides of the aisle, you had splits in those parties between populists and corporatists. And both parties, the corporatists, have a slight majority. But there are serious populists still existing in both parties. And we have to bring them together and unify them around issues where they will find common cause. And I think that's the only way we rebuild a majority in this country.
I think our problem is that the Republicans, they have a strategy.
Yes, they do.
And they have also defined the strategy that we have to work in.
That's right.
And we really must find a way that we can
build our own platform.
Build our own.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, that I find it just appalling that we get caught up in talking about abortion when the country is in an incredible economic crisis. I mean, the lack of leadership in this country right now on both sides of the aisle is frightening. You can read the most conservative journals and magazines and business magazines right now, and they are all predicting a serious economic crisis in this country within the next 5 years. And what are we talking about? Abortion. That's absurd. I mean, that is utterly absurd, and the Democrats ought to be ashamed of themselves. So, sorry.
Do you get feedback from women's groups that don't like what you just said?
No, actually, I don't. And I say the same thing. I will say the same thing about the gay marriage issue. And, you know, there are certainly people who would say, that's the top of my agenda. And there are certainly women and more women's organizations than women individually who would say, abortion's the top of my agenda. And I'd say, yeah, well, let's just get serious here. Who do we think George Bush is going to nominate to the Supreme Court? I mean, really. But no, generally speaking, the only opposition I have heard in this state to this idea is from people who are worried about the libertarians doing it better than we'll do it. And that, I think, is something we have to take on head on. Jody. Honchos.
And interestingly enough, the people who get Manic and Minnick in the office, both so well, not in office, those two consultants brought up health care.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna take the issue and last the working party to take it.
Absolutely.
So corporate interest is a big, I mean, this is a perfect issue for the working party.
Absolutely.
It concerns all of the people.
Right. In the interest of the camera, again, let me just say, Jody, to repeat, because they can only hear from the microphone, that Jody's point was she just was at a City Club meeting and heard the four political honchos from right, left, and center, or center, left, or right, talking about political issues in the state. And it was the right wing that brought up the health care issue, and it's true. And they're going to try and solve it in a right-wing fashion, and we need to get there first. Yeah.
How are you going to go about reassuring the social issues, cultural issues we're not talking about? Reassure women, gay, other people, and reassuring them without talking about it.
Reassuring means what?
Well, that they're not going to get rid of growth.
They are going to get rid of Roe. Do you seriously think we're going to hold on to Roe v. Wade through the Bush Supreme Court? Forget it. Roe is gone. I mean, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but Roe is gone. So we better get it together so that we control the states and we can actually make abortion legal in the state of Oregon. We better hunker down and get serious. I mean, we're living in a dream world here. I'd rather see a lot of things, but Roe is gone.
But it's definitely the economics that we have to pursue. I did see Hillary Clinton today speaking on C-SPAN to a women's league council, I believe. And I have mixed emotions about the Clinton.
Join the club.
It's the most direct and accurate I've ever heard her speak about the issues that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we will get some help from the Democratic Party.
Well,
if they find someone there that they can get in front of, Bill Clinton did not.
Well, the whole point of this issue of fusion voting, if I could just repeat, because some people have come in after I started, is that you could nominate a Democrat, or you could nominate a Republican. But you could vote for them on the Working Families Party line, and you nominate them because they will back your issues. And you list, you make your own issues. You decide your own platform, and you stick to it. You don't have to go vote for the lesser of two evils. You vote for your candidate because your candidate said he was going to back you on these issues, and if he doesn't, the next time, you're either going to run your own candidate against him or you're going to endorse the guy on the other side. I mean, we have to start playing hardball here. And we have to control our own agenda, and the only way to do that is by forming our own party. But you don't want to be throwing your vote away. I mean, the best example I can give of what fusion voting could have done is imagine the 2000 presidential election. If the Green Party had been able to nominate Al Gore on their party line and vote for Al Gore as Green Party members, we would have elected Al Gore, and he would have known that his margin of victory came from the Greens, and he would have had to listen to them on their agenda. So that, I mean, to me, that's the easiest example I can give of what it would look like, you know? And yes, there's always a danger it could go the other way. There's a danger that the Libertarians would fuse with the Republicans, and it depends on whether or not we can put forward a platform that appeals to working people in this country.
Are other people, other parties, other third parties supporting the idea of diffusion? The work is new on that?
I don't know. I actually was hoping to have more of an interchange with the Greens here, because I know that they have been principally supporting instant runoff voting, which is another way of doing this. I favor fusion because I think it allows you to put more emphasis on party rather than candidate, issue rather than candidate, which I'm in favor of. I really think one of the keys is to get away from the candidate as the bearer of all of our hopes and desires. I think we have to be the ones that own our own platform, and we hold candidates accountable. It doesn't much matter. In some ways, a candidate is someone who goes and is answerable to whomever elected him or her. And if you really take that seriously and hold them accountable, you have a whole different relationship to politics than electing John Kerry and hoping to hell he turns out to be a decent human being. I mean, you know, it's a long shot, to say the least. John Edwards did talk about economic issues.
Because the Republicans defined the agenda, which was moral issues and security.
He also was not running on as president, he wasn't running on behalf of a party that was talking about economic issues. So he was kind of their guy who goes talk about how my mama was a mill worker, but he wasn't really putting forward a serious platform, I don't think. I mean, you have to have a very strategic platform that goes, you know, the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan. You know, we're going to go for this year and that year and this the next year. There's this book that I've just finished reading, which has fired me up big time, called The Right Nation. It's a conservative book. It's written by two conservatives, and it's about how the United States went from 1964 to 1980 to 2004. And it's a fascinating read. It's a really important read. It's kind of a more intellectual version of What's the Matter with Kansas, which is just sort of a fun book to read. But
do you consider black issues social or public?
What's a black issue? I mean,
poverty.
Yeah, well, there you go. I would call that an economic issue. Poverty, yeah, sounds like an economic issue to me.
Yeah, it does to me.
Yeah.
But it's also social.
Well, as is health insurance social. Yeah, no, I didn't say economic versus social. I said economic versus cultural. And I would put that cultural / religious, I think.
Well, what happened to Bill Clinton and Hillary when she tried to get a health program going in this country? What happened?
I don't think they had people behind them. I mean, they did not.
They didn't have the Democrats behind
them. Except, well, they didn't have the Democrats. They didn't have us. I mean, they weren't out there organizing us. You need to organize people first. Is it time? Am I done? There he is. Hi, Green Person. Hi, David. Come on. Come on up here.
Okay. I'm going to be up in 15 minutes here, but Barbara Dudley is a colleague and a friend, but we do have some agreements and some disagreements, so I understood that you wanted to engage in conversation around electoral
IRV versus fusion and stuff like that. And I said I was sorry we didn't have a conversation going, because I think it's a good discussion.
It is a good discussion. And I'm David Cobb,
of the
Green Party presidential candidate in 2004, general counsel for the Green Party. And I will, for this conversation, just acknowledge I also was a consultant for and paid person with the Center for Voting and Democracy. So I definitely have a position that I believe
preferential voting or instant runoff voting is superior to fusion.
Explain it, because I haven't actually had this debate.
Did you want to jump in first?
I wanted to say this before you explain the IRB. I think that people, it's going to take longer to get the IRB
mm-hmm.
because people aren't educated about it. I'm from New York. I know about fusion. Barbara's saying that other states already have some fusion. I think fusion would be the first step. She's talking about a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan. But if we had a 2-year plan to get fusion and then a 5-year plan to get IRB, like just take it in steps.
Fair enough. But what I would tell you is that there's never been an example of the implementation to move from fusion to instant runoff voting. And so I will say with respect that fusion has been a failure in terms of really building a systemic movement because it is too easy for the corporate controlled Democrats to end up taking the progressives for granted under fusion. So instant runoff voting as a voting system, you understand fusion because it allows different parties to put the same candidate on the ballot. Instant runoff voting says that instead different candidates will be on the ballot under their different party names so that they can actually represent the principles and values, but the voter now is empowered to fully express her or his opinion. Well, my first choice is, my second choice is, my third choice. We say instant runoff voting is as easy as 1, 2, 3 because the voter just rank orders their choices. And secondly, and I think profoundly important for a radical Democrat, little d Democrat who actually believes in the principles, it empowers the voter, not the party bosses, which is really what fusion does, right?
The word boss is a loaded boss.
I apologize because this is just dialogue.
How about party leaders?
Party leaders. It empowers the party leaders. My apologies, Barbara. Thank you for calling me on that. I really do want this to be a constructive dialogue.
Okay, so let me ask you, I would actually love to have this debate sometime when we have more time because it would be a really useful thing, and you and I should exchange phone numbers. But,
again.
Yes. But,
things are looking up.
Do you dance? The question I have though about fusion is that certainly under fusion voting, the Working Families Party in New York, for example, can nominate its own candidates and run its own candidates. If it cannot get a Democrat or a Republican to support its platform, it can run its own. Now, if they cave on that, if they support somebody who's really, and they have, I agree with that. They've supported, like, for us, it would be supporting a Kulongoski, for example. I'd die first.
But you too, that when the Greens challenge.
Okay. No, it's true. But there's no reason why we couldn't fuse with the Greens.
Totally. Listen, I want to be very explicit. I'm not saying that I am opposed to fusion.
Mm-hmm.
I am saying that I believe preferential voting or instant runoff voting is better than fusion.
I think we would probably agree that
actually the real goal for electoral reform in this country is proportional representation, right?
Yes.
So to me, the question is, what is the best path, the strategic path to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Steve.
Do you think that, excuse me.
Yeah.
We have only 2 minutes, so we
I
should.
I understand. You're doing a great segue to my talk at 3:30.
Yes. You're Steve Kasson.
Talking about instant runoff voting, good. Proportional representation, what they are, and how you get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of hoping we could all be on the same platform because I think it's an interesting debate.
What are the chances of proportional?
Well, I will say this, that remember that the winner-take-all single-member district model was basically came out of the 18th century when it was, in fact, probably the best thinking had gone into how to do elections at that time. The reality is an antiquated system that is only being used now in Britain, the United States, and some of the rest of the old British Empire.
Yeah.
All the rest of the world has gone to proportional representation or preferential voting systems. So clearly, if we take a look at the big picture, what we see is the use of proportional representation as a more democratic election system is on the march and on the move. And I can also say that I always look for models that actually work. And the reason that I am committed to making sure that the Green Party exists, that we also engage progressive Democrats with respect, but also clarity that we are Greens is that the only time these winner-take-all systems have actually changed is when there was a militant, unreasonable political party that refused to buy into the spoiler argument, that refused to buy into the two-party system, that refused to buy into this is the way it has to be. Everywhere that you can actually see movement. For example, Ireland. Right? For example, Australia. These are, and the reason I pick those is because these are former British colonies, right? These are, they had our experience, and in both of those cases, and what's interesting, it's happening in Canada as well. And here's something, y'all, I want to be clear about this. It wasn't the Green Party that actually did that. See, I'm not up here pitching the Green Party as the example or the only way to make it happen. I am making the argument here, and that is, it takes an independent political party to pressure the two to make not only electoral reforms, but let's be clear about this. Here's what third parties in this country have had to champion at the ballot box. The abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, creating the Social Security Administration, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, pure food and drug laws, ending child labor, the direct election of the United States Senate. And I see your face. I just want to conclude here.
I want to have a conversation with you about this.
The entire fabric of what we today think of as a just and compassionate society, that fabric had to be woven together by social movements in the streets and radical political parties running candidates for office. And originally, the establishment parties opposed every one of those.
I would love to really have a serious and more long-term dialogue about this, because I think there are ways in which we're singing the same song, but we're just using buzzwords that make it seem as though we're not. So I would really, let's make a deal.
A deal that we will continue this conversation, and I hope, thank you, I hope that Barbara and I, in this brief little exchange, has demonstrated that it is totally possible for a progressive Democrat.
I would never consider myself a progressive Democrat. I am with the Working Families Party.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Let's be perfectly clear.
I didn't know
that
the Working Families were here.
Yes, so. We are here, and I'm with them.
I will say this. It is possible for progressives of all political parties to disagree, but do it with respect and civility, and that's what we need to have happen in Oregon.
Yes.
Thanks.
And I vote Green. Don't get me wrong.
All right. Yes.
One question. I'd like.
All right.
How do you convince the American public?
We've been given
start
a
the
time
local
out,
level.
Time
and
off.
I will
over.
Say that Blair Bovier is here. I just saw him come in. I know that this is Blair Bovier, who I'll just give a quick pitch because I got to go up. But Blair is the founder of the Green Party, one of the founders of the Green Party in Oregon, the first gubernatorial candidate in Oregon, one of the genuine leaders and founders and unsung heroes of the Green Party movement in this country, has done as much work on instant runoff voting as anybody else.
Okay.
Talk to that guy if you live in Oregon.
Okay.
Sorry, Blair, you got more work.
Thank you, Barbara. Very good.